Hello and welcome to The Other Way, a lifestyle podcast exploring uncommon, unconventional, or otherwise alternative approaches to life, business, and health. I'm your host, Kasia. I'm the founder of InFlow, a women's wellness brand that designs intentional products to help women reconnect to their unique cyclical rhythm and find a balance between being and doing. This podcast is an extension of my mission with InFlow. Here, we provide intentional interviews with inspiring humans, trailblazers, researchers, spiritual teachers, and more on the journey of doing things the other way. I'm so excited to welcome my next guest, Nimisha Gandhi. Nimisha is a functional medicine nutritionist, Ayurvedic counselor, yoga nidra slash meditation teacher, and a former tech founder. She holds a BS in pre-med psychobiology from UCLA and has years of additional education in her field. She has a private practice, Moon Cycle Nutrition, where she specializes in reproductive and gut health with an emphasis on the mind, body, and soul. And today we are getting into all of it. We're talking about Nimisha's journey from pre-med at UCLA to switching into nutrition and Ayurveda. For all my listeners out there who are challenging themselves or feeling their hearts called towards following something they're passionate about, her story is going to be so inspiring because she really went against the grain of what was expected of her to go down this path. We covered Ayurveda, what it is, the doshas, and also how Ayurveda looks at female hormonal health. So for those of you out there who are familiar with Ayurveda, this is going to be a great deep dive that goes into how Ayurveda relates to female reproductive issues as well. We talked about the importance of the gut when it comes to female hormonal imbalances, the gut-brain connection, tying it back to PMS symptoms, PMDD, and other conditions. And then we also dove into a pretty surprising topic, which is yoga nidra. I don't know if anyone out there is even familiar with what yoga nidra is. We're definitely going to dive into it. It's a type of meditation. But what was really fascinating was Nimisha shared some pretty incredible research around yoga nidra's effect on conditions like amenorrhea, PCOS, PTSD, and other conditions and disorders. So much more in this juicy episode, so much more to come. And I swear, as I was wrapping this up, Nimisha and I both reflected how we felt like we touched so much, but there's just so much more we could get into. Nimisha has such an incredible wealth of knowledge on so many topics around both the clinical side of reproductive and hormonal health for women, but also the spiritual side. And I just cannot wait to share this incredible woman with you all. Without further ado, let's welcome her and jump on in. Nimisha, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It was so fun meeting you and making this happen.
I know. It's been a long time coming, all the way since December. I love it. But I feel like in a way it's almost better because I've gotten a chance to follow your content. I've like really gotten a bunch of questions all lined up. So this is going to be great. So before we jump in, one of the things I love to ask every single guest is, what are three words that you would use to describe yourself?
I would say mysterious, fun, and curious.
Ooh, yeah. Mysterious. I truly think that's the first time I've ever heard that. How does that show up for you? I'm curious.
You know, it showed up in so many ways in my life. So when I was younger, and even just now, I'm an introvert extrovert. So it takes me a minute to really open up. And I've been told so many times when people meet me, it's like, oh, you were really mysterious until I found a subject to talk about. And then I like opened up, and I've kind of carried that vibration with me a little bit. It makes things interesting and fun.
Oh my God. You know what's so funny? I actually agree with that. Like when we met in person, I remember you came up to me and you were like, you had this very like confident energy about you, but you didn't give away too much, you know, but I wouldn't have guessed like the introvert extrovert. I could totally see that kind of mixed in with that mysterious vibe. I love it. You're like the first person who's used that word and it's so on point. Perfect. Okay, cool. So I think that gives everyone a little bit of a vibe for who they're listening to. And in addition to being mysterious and all those other words that you just mentioned, you're also a certified nutritionist from Bowen College of Nutrition in Berkeley, which is like one of the leading institutes on nutrition. For those of you out there who are listening to this, it's like the foremost place to study nutrition because I know a bit about it. You're an Ayurvedic counselor and a yoga nidra teacher. Can you share a bit with us about your story? What inspired you to kind of dive into this path of nutrition, Ayurveda, yoga?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I always thought I was going to be a medical doctor. It was kind of an expectation in my family. And I went to UCLA, studied pre-med, psychobiology, did all the things to get to med school. And somewhere along the way, I just started listening more and more to my body, started listening to alternative viewpoints, you know, just kind of around me in my environment. And my grandparents had also got sick at that time, and they were going through the medical system where they were just like in and out of hospitals, and the treatment just didn't feel right with me. And they weren't seeing the whole picture. They weren't, in so many ways, I felt like they weren't seeing the human. They were only seeing medical diagnoses and pain management. And so I really started exploring, like, is medical school cut out for me? Is this what I want in my future? And as soon as I started questioning that, I learned about an Ayurvedic school near my campus at UCLA. And I'm Indian. I grew up with Ayurveda infused in my life. There was never anything formal saying we're doing this because it's Ayurvedic. It was just, it's a way of life for many, many South Asian people, many Indian people, because it's just embedded in the culture. And so it felt familiar. And I was like, I felt really curious, but I probably read, like, I went to the website and it was an immediate yes for me. And so I started going to this Ayurvedic school on the weekends while I was finishing up my undergraduate degree at UCLA. And then once you get started on this path of alternative or holistic health, it just opens you up to so many other ways of thinking, other certifications that you want, so other types of practitioners. So after that, I this was 20 years ago, and I didn't know many people who were studying Ayurveda or even desired Ayurveda in their lives. And I didn't know how to put myself out there. So I stayed with the conventional a little bit. I worked in clinical research. I still stayed in that realm a little bit. Then I moved back up to the Bay Area, and one thing led to another. I ended up going to Bowman College for nutrition. Then I studied functional nutrition and all these other things that came along with it. And that's how I really got started. But it was really fueled by a passion from what I thought what was happening from personal experience in medical care.
That so resonates incredibly deeply, not just the kind of feeling of, you know, perhaps there could be a different way to provide care for a lot of, especially chronic conditions, because acute is a completely different story, right? Mm-hmm. Like you break your ankle, it's very obvious that if you need surgery, you get surgery. But when it comes to a lot of chronic conditions, the Western system really does tend to break people down into chunks. And so it makes a lot of sense. Well, actually, it doesn't. To me, it's like, it doesn't make sense to me why people don't mm-hmm. see that. But I mean, I think it's so incredible that although you went on this like very traditionally successful path to UCLA, you were like on the pre-med track, you followed your heart and pivoted. And I want to actually hone in on that for a second, because there are a lot of my listeners that I know are going through some big life changes, and it can be scary to go off of what's like the traditional successful path and do something different. And you did this ahead of the curve, kind of like 20 years ago, Ayurveda was not really a thing. Like we weren't talking about it the way we are now. So I'm curious, like what was that transition point for you and what really kept you going? Because you kind of, it sounds like, had to go back to your family and be like, you know, I'm actually going to do something different.
Yes. With my family, I still like, they still thought I would eventually go to med school or get some sort of graduate degree. And I had just, I think I enrolled in the school without telling anyone really. I just was like, I'm doing this. And, you know, this was 20 years ago. I don't remember the finite details, but that's just how it was. I was like, and my parents actually seemed pretty proud. They were like, oh, you're tapping back into the culture. And this seems really interesting. My grandmother was delighted, you know, and she's like, oh, this is something that she felt like she could connect with. But they always thought that I would go on and still pursue medical school or some sort of other, you know, like pharmacy or something. It just never really happened. That's not, you know, once I immersed myself in the way of Ayurveda, I just couldn't go back to traditional schooling. I just couldn't go back to the traditional framework of how of health systems.
So powerful. I love that. Like dip your feet in. You don't have to necessarily tell everyone you're completely changing your life and then just see what happens. So kind of in that whole vein, what is Ayurveda? For people who don't know, who are not familiar with it, what exactly is it?
Yeah, Ayurveda, which means the knowledge of life or science of life, when you break up Ayur and Veda, it's a Sanskrit word originating in India like 5,000 years ago. It is based upon the understanding that nature, including humans, are made up of five elements, which are ether, air, fire, water, and earth. And according to Ayurveda, health is not just the absence of disease, but the alignment of the mind, body, and nature. So it's a whole body type of medicine. And each combination of an element makes up a person's personality type, their unique makeup, and that's resonant of all living things. And so Ayurveda is really a life science. It's kind of a blueprint on how to live your life in the most balanced and harmonious way.
That is so beautiful. So Ayurveda would consider something like anxiety as a type of perhaps imbalance?
Yes. So let's step back. Actually, in Ayurveda, there's a key component called doshas, and so doshas is your energetic blueprint. It's what's determined at conception, and it basically tells you what your, you know, kind of predicts what your personality would be like, what your temperament, what's going to keep you healthy, and what might kind of throw you off and may cause disease in your body. And of course, as you grow as a person, your dosha also grows. And so there are three main types: vata, pitta, and kapha. Vata is made up mostly of the air and ether element. Pittas are made up of like the fire and water, and kaphas are made up of water and earth. And everyone has a combination of these elements of vata, pitta, kapha, and that's what makes you so unique. So for me, I'm mostly vata. I would say, you know, like 60% I'm vata, or maybe even 55% I'm vata. Then I'm like maybe 35%. Pitta, and the remaining I'm kapha. You know, I have very little kapha in me. And this kind of just determines what I'm really prone to, and it does play out. And so when we talk about ailments like anxiety, we also look at which element in the body is being disturbed that's causing that anxiety. And how do we bring that back into balance? And anxiety is multifaceted, right? There can be so many reasons for anxiety. It can be something that's going on in the mind, but it could be something that's going on in the heart, or it could be something that's going on in the womb, you know? And so where is that anxiety coming from? Where is that root imbalance? And then your dosha type, their dosha types are more prone to anxiety. So Vata people are highly prone to anxiety because they have a lot of ether and air in them. So they have all this like movement and energy, and anxiety is really pent up energy that hasn't been moved out of the body, or sometimes pent up emotions. And Kapha people rarely get anxious, or, you know, if they get anxious, that means something's really wrong. It's hard to move. It's hard to disturb them, you know? Yeah.
That is such a good kind of breakdown of also looking at how anxiety can be viewed differently between the different doshas. Let's dive a little bit deeper into each of the doshas. Can you walk us through for each of the Vata, mm-hmm. Pitta, Kapha doshas? What are some of the qualities associated with them?
I like to give a visual. So I visualize Vatas as hummingbirds. Hummingbirds are small, they're tiny, but they're mighty, and they're always up in the air. They're fluttering, right? They're very unique. They have this long beak, and they're very colorful, actually. If you look at a hummingbird's wings when it's all spread out, they're very colorful. And that's exactly how I describe a Vata person. In just physically, Vatas are either really tall and lanky, or they're short and petite. They're like extremes. I think like Vatas are people with extremes. They're the artists. They're the creators, the creative writers. You know, they're the healers also in our society. They just have an artistic way about them in everything that they do. They're a little eccentric also. And they're variable. So they change, like the wind, they change. They can be hot and cold at the same time. They can like two opposing things at the same time. And it seems like their minds are always in many places at once. But they are also very kind and sweet, and they have this way about them. And that's how I see them as, you know, and it's easy for Vata people to get carried away. Again, like if you think about the wind, they just kind of get carried away. They get excited by an idea and they'll be all in. And sometimes it may not be something that they truly desire. And then the Pittas, again, I like to say the Pittas are the lions in our society. They are what in Western psychology we say type A personalities, but it's not really that they're type A, that they just, they do better with predictability. They do better when they're on time, because when they're not on time, it causes them lots of internal frustration. It causes an imbalance in them. And so they need organization. They're the leaders in our society, and a very specific type of leaders, more like the CEOs of companies. They are the ones who lead our country, our government. Those are more Pitta types. They're Pitta types, like a lion can get angry really fast, really irritated as well. But they're also lovers in a way where, you know, like passionate lovers. They're really about the passion, the hot fire in them. And their digestion is really strong. But they're also the type that can get upset if they're not meant to fast, you know, because they, you know, their digestion is so strong that they need to eat constantly, or just at least on time. And then we have our beautiful Kaphas. And Kaphas, I say, are like the elephants in our world. They're very sturdy, and it takes a lot to move them, you know, unlike the Vatas that were like a little burst of air and they're just off, right? But the Kaphas need more cajoling to move. They're just sturdier. Their feet are planted in the ground, and they are the nurses and the teachers and the caregivers in our society. Natural nurturers. Kaphas are beautiful in features. They have big eyes, luscious hair. Their skin is usually really smooth and clear as well.
Those are such good visuals that you brought out. I love the animal references. I'm curious how much of, you know, when we think about a lot of doshas, I feel like a lot of the literature out there speaks to how somebody's body frame might be like, but it sounds like there's a lot of these emotional kind of behavioral characteristics that are playing quite a huge role. Like when I think about people in my life, like I think about my husband, very tall and lanky, but as you're describing the Kapha type, I'm like, oh, he's kind of like a Kapha Vata maybe even. So I'm curious, like how much does the physical body affect our dosha versus our personality? Or is it really like a blend of everything?
I truly think it's a blend of everything. Our physical energetics definitely will play a role in our, you know, just our digestion and our moods in a way, because our gut health is related to our brain health, our mood as well. But in Ayurveda, it's not just, you can be a complete Kapha body type, but have a 100% Vata mindset, you know? So, and you know, and that's the thing about like, no one's 100% one dosha. You're always a combination of a dosha.
Yeah. And does that shift over time? I know you mentioned that a lot of it is designated at birth or at conception even, but over the course of your life, can you adjust your dosha?
Yeah. So the dosha that you're born with is called your Prakriti. And that is the dosha that you want to maintain throughout your life, because that is it. You know, you are born with the genetic blueprint. Unless you have surgery or something, you can't really change that. And if you try to change that, it's like you're trying to change the course of a river. When you change the course of the river, you change everything else, right? You change the environment, the fauna, flora, everything around you. And that is what happens in your body when you try to change it. So let's say a Kapha body type who is a little bit rounder, a little bit sturdier in build. But, you know, our society really idolizes a Vata body type, like super skinny and tall and lanky. And if you're of Kapha is trying so hard to be a Vata, sure, the Kapha may diet and do all these things and lose 30 pounds and, you know, be skinny. But then now this Kapha is depressed, has all this anxiety, has all of these other mental health issues, as well as physical health issues. Now, all of a sudden, they might have aches and pains in their body, or heart palpitations, or maybe so many different things. So, no. So the short answer is no. You cannot. The biological blueprint of yours should not change over the course of time. There are influences. So our childhood is heavily influenced by the Kapha. It's our childhood is, it's a period of growth. So a lot of kids have more Kapha in them. You know, a lot of kids have like asthma and then they grow out of it, or they're always have running nose and they're just going through this, a lot of the bone and body and the mucus change. Then you get into your middle life, midlife, let's say mid-20s to mid-age. That's your high pitta time in life. That's where you're, you know, career driven. And so, and then in your later lives is your Vata age, where you're like older, your skin is more frail, you're drier, and then you're just different. And so these influences you. The period in your life influences you, the environment, the seasons, like even the seasons have a dosha. So right now we're in winter, almost getting to spring. We're leaving Vata, getting kind of into the Kapha season where it's going to be more wet and snow is melting and things are warming up a little bit. And so those are all things that influence you too and can change. But if you go so far away from the biological blueprint that you were born with, you are inviting disease into your body.
Absolutely. I love that example of the extreme dieting, because I can think, you know, I think I'm more predominantly actually Pitta Vata, but I remember in my younger ages, like really going against that like extreme Pitta digestion and hunger and like trying to shift that with like extreme fasting and like the effects that that would have on my body and my energy levels. It just like completely changed my personality and brought out actually like a lot of anxiety and also like a lot of hangry anger for sure. Hey ladies, Kasha here. Sorry to interrupt, but I wanted to take a moment to double tap on what Nimisha talks about when she discusses the spiritual significance of connecting to your cycle. I absolutely love that Nimisha brought this up. This is definitely a topic I have several other episodes on. And for me, viewing my cycle as a means to deeper connection with my intuition, with my spiritual self, really became a transformative part of my practice. Allowing the ebbs and flows of the changes that I was experiencing throughout the month to be my guide helped me harness and heighten my intuition, and this translated to all other aspects of my life as well. This is also part of the reason why in the planner that my team and I have designed in Flow, which is a cyclical planner for women, and it is designed to help women align their schedule with the state of their hormones. It is why in this planner, we included not just the traditional scheduling tactics and tools, but we also included journaling prompts for the different phases of your cycle, especially in the luteal phase. I found that in the luteal phase, which is the last part of your cycle right before your period, a lot of different parts would come up. Imposter parts, doubtful parts, angry parts. And in the past, those are parts that I would have resisted and fought against, and that would have resulted in me acting out of alignment with myself. And so by bringing some of these into the planner becomes more than just a planner. It becomes a tool that can help you become mindfully aware of where you are in your cycle, yes, and make adjustments, but also it can be a reminder to bring mindfulness and to bring compassion into every aspect of your life, regardless of the things that are coming up. And that is such a powerful personal spiritual guide for me, I have found, and for a lot of the women who use this planner. Now, if this sounds like something you'd be interested in, please check out inflowplanner.com to learn more. And for all my podcast listeners, I'd love to offer code podcast10 for 10% off any purchase. Okay, now back to the episode. So I want to shift gears actually to talk about hormonal issues and how they perhaps relate to Ayurveda and also nutrition. I'm curious, since you have this background, actually you also have the yoga nidra background, you can kind of like zoom out and see it from like really like mind, body, spirit, all of it connected from physical movement point of view, what we consume point of view, from like a philosophy point of view, it's quite beautiful. How does Ayurveda perhaps view hormonal health, kind of fertility, menstrual conditions? Like, what is the perspective there?
Mm-hmm. Ayurveda and Eastern medicine in general is so beautiful when it comes to women's health, because women's health is actually revered. The menstrual cycle in Ayurveda is revered. You know, it's honored. It's taken into account of a woman's health. It's and there are lots of studies in India that are done on women and on menstruation, and it factor in different hormonal cycles, phases of a woman's life. Whereas, like in Western medicine, women weren't even required to be in clinical studies until 1993, and so there's like a very different. Absolutely insane. So, you know, that's why, like, when they like came out with all these medications, women, they never studied women. And so women would have poor outcomes and things. But in Ayurveda, I think why even in modern medicine in India, even in China, like in all over Asia, why women, there are so many more studies on women's health is because it originates from Ayurveda's lens, where the menstrual cycle is revered. It's seen as really important in a part of health. And Ayurveda uses the menstrual cycle as a view into the person's physical and mental well-being also. So it's not just like an add-on. It's an integrated part of it. And it was only a couple of years ago that the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology recognized the menstrual cycle as the fifth vital sign, which means that your doctor should ask you about your periods to understand what's going on in your overall health. And then, so when there are imbalances doctors are looking at Ayurvedic doctors and practitioners are actually asking key questions like understanding your dosha type and then understanding what imbalances are happening in your body that might be shifting to cause hormonal health issues.
So can we walk through maybe an example, right? Because you have somebody come in and you can either use me or somebody similar, hypothetically. They're coming in, an Ayurvedic doctor is evaluating their dosha type. And then how do some of the symptoms like relate to that? If you can walk through like a sample condition around how it might be viewed and potentially then like what would at a high level the approach be in terms of treating some of that?
Yeah. So with every imbalance, like let's say heavy bleeding, an Ayurvedic practitioner is going to try to understand, okay, are you, let's say you're a heavy bleeder and you're a pitta type. And that kind of makes sense because bleeding is associated with pitta and the heaviness of it, the flow of it. And then they're going to ask questions like, do you also have burning or itching with that bleed? You know, and then that's definitely an indication of something that's going on with pitta. Or do you have dryness but heavy bleeding? That could be leaning more towards a vata imbalance with the pitta imbalance. So it really does try to be very specific and pinpointed as well. And this is where I like the blend of modern medicine and also Ayurveda, because I've worked in clinical research and things, I think it is really important to have a blend. And so if you have heavy bleeding, there's also looking at, okay, is there an iron deficiency? And then how can we correct that to help you make you feel better, but also addressing more of, okay, if there is too much fire in your body, how can we look at nutrition and reduce like the heat that's coming in from your food or your lifestyle? Like you're heavy bleeding, but maybe always on the run, always in the go, or, you know, always in combat mode or something, you know, all of those things can be contributing to that heavy bleeding. And so how do we address heavy bleeding by looking at other root causes?
So good. I love that. And I love that you're able to view things from both that like clinical Western lens around, you know, any sort of deficiencies that can be tested for and then trying to heal that by balancing it out. It sounds like that is so powerful. So powerful.
Yeah. I just want to also add like heavy bleeding. There's so many causes too. Like I'm not trying to minimize it. Like, oh, you know, you just stop eating spicy foods and you'll stop heavy bleeding. Cause I mean, there could be like something like fibroids that could be causing it or cysts or, you know, just something else physiologically. And Ayurveda goes into that too, like really deeply as well, like trying to, you know, they'll do like a physical examination such also to figure it out. But there's like a spiritual and holistic component. Like you're not just, you're just not someone with fibroids. You're someone with like a history of this. And you're someone who has, you're prone to this tendency because of your genetic type.
So powerful. It, you know, makes me think about over the summer, I have endometriosis. I've talked about this pretty openly on this podcast. And over the summer, I went to a yoga retreat meditation retreat. It was at a Zen monastery. It was Tasahara in Big Sur. And it was incredible. I mean, like a whole week of sleeping enough, eating like really non-processed foods and really lowering my stress levels. Like we were meditating for several hours a day. And that week, the week that I got back, I started my cycle and I had no symptoms, no cramps, nothing. And I'm talking like I am somebody who is doubled over in cramps. Like the day one, day two requires like nonstop Motrin to like keep me alive and a heating pad. And I barely had any symptoms. And so it's just so wild to think about, you know, how, for example, maybe the chronic inflammation that is persistent in my body can have an effect on those symptoms. And so how much lifestyle can really make a difference in like balancing things out as well.
Yes. Yeah. And with endo, I've worked with so many people that have been able to put their symptoms in like remission almost. You know, there are different degrees and levels of endometriosis, but really starting at the basic for so many people, like removing the environmental inflammatory substances that make your body just inflamed, right? There's sometimes like, you know, like, okay, you have endo, but what can you control around you so you don't become inflamed further?
Ah, so powerful. So you work with a lot of women who have hormonal imbalances. I know that that is an area you specialize in. So I would love to walk through some of the conditions that you see in your clinic, virtual clinic, real life clinic, wherever. Mm-hmm. And just really, if you could walk us through, obviously every case is different, but like, what are some of the highlights of things you might want to call out in terms of, you know, for endometriosis, it's like, how can we lower inflammation? It would be like one of the starting points. Give us like a couple of bullets for some of the conditions that you see. Like, what are some of the routes maybe you take from an investigatory place? Like, I would test mm-hmm. for this, or I would start to look at, you know, how can we lower inflammation or do X, Y, and Z?
Yeah. So one of the first things I learned in Ayurveda and did for myself was like fill out a 10-page questionnaire about my own health. And that really stuck with me because they were questions. It's like, how is this even related to why I'm here? You know, like I'm here, let's say for endo, how is like my digestion related, or how is like what I did in my childhood related to this? And that had made, and that was a core part of my studies in Ayurveda. And so I created my own intake form, and I always joke with my clients, like, I know it's long. It's like 10 pages long.
10 pages? Yes. Oh my God. Wait, hold on. Yeah. I want to hear what's on some of those pages. Yeah.
Yeah. I start slow and subtle and then I get into it, but I have several questions on just bowel movements. And I'll explain why soon, but also things like what, you know, if they've traveled and they got sick or they've just had food poisoning throughout their life. I ask about their skin, hair, really in depth, and how it's changed. And then I think I just have several pages asking questions about their hormones and periods. like, you know, what color is it? Does it smell? Do you have PMS, water retention? I have all the questions in there. And so, and this really helps me to understand. I also learn a lot just by talking to the person, obviously. But when you're sitting down quietly and filling out this form, you might think of things that you don't always think of to say to your practitioner in person, right? And so that's another reason behind this form. And then so many times people come to me for hormonal health, but that's not where my mind really actually goes. And so in Ayurveda, all disease and health begins in the gut. And we have this concept of called Agni, like your digestive fire, or you just have this fire burning low in your belly. And this fire is really what determines your vital life force in a way. So if your fire is burning kind of low, and I see this a lot with new mothers. I see this a lot with women working in corporate America and just hustling. Fire is really low. That means your energy is really low also, and you're just burnt out, like literally burnt out. And if your fire is too high, you're also like really hot. You're overheated. You're, it's almost like you have too much testosterone in your body. Like you're just, yeah, you're, and then you're prone to like heartburn and indigestion and diarrhea and bleeding too much. That's because you just have too much energy and heat in your body. But when your digestion, your Agni, your fire is just perfect, you feel balanced. You're like, you're able to wake up in the morning, not even need a cup of coffee. You're able to go through the day and you're mostly at peace with yourself and just how you are functioning. And so we are in our goal in Ayurveda is always to keep this Agni Optimal. And so when I talk to a person who's coming in, I'm really thinking about their gut health. And I, you know, I want to know all about their digestion. I want to know what they're eating, how they're processing that food in their body. How long does it take them to assimilate it? Nutrients you're absorbing, because that's telling me everything else. And like with endometriosis, PCOS, you know, when you're coming off of birth control, all of these things, your gut has been altered in some ways. And in some ways, it could be your gut that's causing these other imbalances as well. And there are lots of studies now showing how the gut, there's a gut and brain connection. And that's one of my specialties, actually, the gut microbiome. And so that's where I really start. And then we start working on healing the gut, improving your digestion. Because once you start there, everything else starts to fall into place.
So powerful. So powerful. I'm curious also, when you talk about that gut and brain connection, do you see with your clients some of that? I guess in all cases, it has to happen since the gut and the brain are connected. But like, do you see that also affecting mental health and like the state of, you know, whether we're feeling anxious or depressed? Like I'm thinking also like PMDD, which is like one of the symptoms mm-hmm. that a lot of women have with like really extreme PMS that affects their mental health in like a depressive way.
Yes. So in our gut, we actually also produce and metabolize hormones like progesterone, estrogen, testosterone. So if our gut is not also optimal, that means we're not making optimal levels of these important hormones, or we're not also getting rid of them from our body in optimal ways. So a classic example, estrogen. Our body pumps out a certain amount of estrogen depending on the day of our cycle. Then it circulates throughout our body to do its work, goes through our liver and it's supposed to be metabolized through our liver. And then all that excess estrogen, the byproduct of estrogen, is supposed to go into our gut and then we're supposed to poop it out. But let's say if you're constipated or you don't have optimal digestion or a way to eliminate, now that estrogen that was supposed to be eliminated from your body is going to be recycled in your body. And then your body is still going to pump out what it's supposed to pump out the next day, not knowing that there's extra estrogen rolling around in your body. And so now you can, if that goes on for too long, you can have excess estrogen in your body. And then if you have too much estrogen in comparison to all the other hormones, it can cause other health issues, right? You know, the tender breasts, the soreness, a lot of mood issues as well. Like if you don't have progesterone is like almost like kind of like a love hormone. It helps you feel calmer, it eases anxiety. It eases a lot of other things that we experience, irritability. And if we have too much estrogen and not enough progesterone, we're going to feel irritated and sad and upset, you know, because there's not a balance here. So that is one way how the gut affects our mood. But then, you know, yeah, we also need to look in, like, you know, do a blood test and figure out where are our hormonal imbalances, you know, with PMDD, which I also suffered for a little bit. And I didn't realize, like, I just thought I was going crazy until I realized that, no, this is PMDD. And one thing that really helped with that was working on more of the spiritual side of my menstrual cycle. And, you know, I know on your podcast, as you've talked about like the four phases of the cycle and how that can, what that means. Like in Ayurveda, that is where I learned about the four phases of the cycle and how there's such a big spiritual aspect to connecting with your cycles. I think that really helps. But then addressing that, like I did have low progesterone for a little bit. I did have high testosterone for a little bit. And so I was, you know, over the course of 6 months, I was able to balance it out. But first, I had to recognize that was what was happening.
I love that you mentioned the spiritual aspect. I feel like for a lot of women, I mean, just all of us living in this society where every Monday is supposed to be the same. It doesn't matter if it's like the dead of winter or if you're starting your period or if you're ending, you know, kind of like in the middle and it's ovulation, like the expectation is that you have the same amount of energy, you wake up same time, drink that coffee and go. And so it can just be so difficult to tap into any other rhythm, like your body's infradian rhythm or the rhythms of nature. It's wild to me. Absolutely wild. So, okay. I need to make sure we make time for this before I could keep going down this rabbit hole. I have so many questions for you, but I want to talk about yoga nidra because when we were prepping for this interview, you sent me some links and shared some really fascinating research, which was the effect that yoga nidra has on hormonal health. Can you dive a bit into that and share with us like what has been coming out of the woodwork and like what are some of the benefits? Well, first of all, what is yoga nidra? And then what are some of the benefits? Let's start with what it is.
So yoga nidra is a form of meditation and it has a beautiful origin story. So yoga nidra, when we think of yoga, we think of asanas and like the physical postures, but yoga is really just to be one with yourself, to yoke, right? And yoga and nidra in Sanskrit means sleep. But it's kind of translated like the yoga of sleep, but it's not truly sleep. It's the meditative sleep. It's that when you're tapping into meditation, this form of meditation, so you're tapping into your higher self. And it's done in this beautiful way. And spiritually, it's said that all of creation actually came from yoga nidra. So Lord Vishnu, who's a Hindu deity, or from the Vedas, he was taking a nap and his lovely wife, goddess Lakshmi, she's massaging his feet and she's whispering things to him. And what she was whispering was yoga nidra, the script, like these really powerful words. So he fell into this state in his brain and he dreamt of life as we know it. He dreamt up the cosmos, the universe, and that is where all creation came from. So in so many ways, yoga nidra came before yoga. It came before anything else. And I love that story because when you actually do yoga nidra, it does feel like you're traveling through the cosmos sometimes. It just feels like a journey. And I've been a practitioner since 2017. And what you do in yoga nidra is really cool. All you do is lay down. All you do is lay down. You know, meditation can be hard for so many people because you have to like stay seated and silent, but you're laying down this entire time and you create this beautiful yoga nidra nest where it's like cozy up with blankets and pillows and cushions and eye pillows, and you're very comfortable. So you're not worrying about your body. And the teacher, the guide, guides you through body relaxation in a way that you're also tapping into your beta brainwaves, then your alpha, and then your theta. And when you're in your theta, you're in this creative conscious state. So it's like you're asleep, but you're awake still, like you're still very cognizant, like you hear every word I'm telling you, but you're just like kind of asleep, like you don't know really where you are. And if you go really...
Is that like a hypnosis of some kind?
Yeah, it's almost like a hypnosis, but we're not really hypnotizing you. It's just the way the meditation goes. And it's something I tell people, you have to try it to know it. You know, there's no adequate way to describe it. So yoga nidra, what you do is you relax your entire body. And you know, when you're relaxing your entire body, you reduce cortisol, you start resetting your nervous system, you tap into your vagus nerve. So there's all these beautiful things that's already happening in your body. And clinically, therapists use a form of yoga nidra to actually help their patients overcome PTSD and really severe trauma. So it's been used by therapists also in their offices. And then in India, of course, they've done tons of studies on the practice of yoga nidra and how it affects the menstrual health cycle, like PCOS, amenorrhea. So just doing yoga nidra for 6 weeks in a row can help you rebalance your hormones, can help you, you know, if you have absent periods, it can start helping you bring it back. One thing that's really powerful we don't talk about enough when we talk about menstrual health is actually insulin resistance. And how having, you know, dysregulated blood sugar, blood glucose levels can actually impact your period. You know, it can impact, especially as you get into perimenopause and menopause, or if you have PCOS. And so a really incredible, powerful study did when, like, they had patients just taking metformin, which is a diabetes medication. And then they had people taking metformin and doing yoga nidra for 6 weeks. And at the end of the 6 weeks, the people who did yoga nidra were able to completely get off of metformin. And so it's just so powerful, like the impact of meditating and the specific form of meditation. And there's a script, and everyone, I mean, there, I say a script, like it's like I make up the meditation and then I read it, or I have it memorized by now, but it's different. And I always tailor it to my clients. So I teach twice weekly at a local yoga studio. But when I have private clients, I'm able to take in their health history. And then I'll, you know, I'll spend, like if it's womb health, I'll spend so much time on that area. We're visualizing healing there. We're talking about tapping into your intuition and coming home to yourself and listening to that voice in your womb. And so it's so beautiful, like what yoga nidra can do.
That is so powerful, because so much of where we operate from day to day is really subconscious, right? And it sounds like when you're in that yoga nidra state, there's an opportunity to really reprogram or change some of those belief systems, kind of some of the feelings associated with those thoughts, because you're going to such a deeper level.
It's almost like, who would you be and who are you if you were not burdened by the body? You know, when it's just your mind and your heart and this like feeling of this, like this, you're this spacious, expansive being that's not, you know, burdened by like what your hands and legs are doing, what your lower back is doing.
I love that. It also makes me, I have this visual in my mind of thinking about having like a glass filled with water. And if every single day you just like empty a quarter of that glass and then fill it up like another, like, I guess, like two quarters full again, and it like keeps overflowing, that's kind of the state from which we're operating from every day when we're stressed, when we're overworking, when we're overdoing, versus emptying that glass entirely, which, you know, I've experienced yoga nidra before. It just puts you in this state of such deep relaxation. I can see why it's known for resetting the nervous system. It's so powerful. I love that. I love that. Nimisha, I could speak with you for hours. There's so many things I haven't asked that I would love to dive into. We're just going to have to grab coffee and make it happen. So I could at least ask one-on-one, but I know people are going to want to know where to find you. Can you please share with our audience, and I'll hyperlink everything below, where can people find you? What do you have coming up? Anything you want to share?
Yeah. So I work with people in person and virtually. So I can work, I have a ton of clients in New York and the East Coast as well. And so my website is mooncyclenutrition.com. I'm pretty active on my Instagram, which is also at mooncyclenutrition. And I have a lot of in-person offerings and occasionally virtual offerings too. So I have a monthly moon cycle circle where I meet with, I curate a beautiful evening of women, and we talk about all of these things, and we add in a little ritual, a little bit of magic and just fun. And, you know, when women get together, it's just magical. And so I have monthly that. I have a monthly yoga nidra sound bath that I also do at a local yoga studio. I have an upcoming women's retreat. I lead retreats. I teach at retreats. So the best way to really follow all of that is actually to just sign up for my newsletter, and you would be on the pulse for that. I just released my Yoni Health and Wellness Guide, and we didn't really get into Yoni health on this podcast, but Yoni is the Sanskrit word for the womb. It's much deeper than that, and you'll see it in my guide, but it's also tied to menstrual health. So you can find all of that through the links I just mentioned.
Check it out below, y'all. Thank you so much, Namisha. This was such a joy.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a fun conversation.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. See you next week. Thank you so much for tuning into The Other Way. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review. It really helps the podcast grow, and I'm ever so grateful. If you want to stay connected, you can find information on how in our show notes. And finally, if you're curious about inflow and want free resources around cyclical living or moon cycles, check out inflowplanner.com. And of course, for all my listeners, you can use the code podcast10, and that's all lowercase, podcast10, for 10% off any purchase. All right, that's all for today. See you next time.